This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, all apart but together for the next 4 hours, the other 20. Those are your responsibility. Hope everybody's doing well. Beautiful day. And Don, good news for you and the kids. Looks like the next 3 days could be pool days. You could get in three more pool days before October.
It is possible.
Wow.
We thought about it today. It was a little too windy. So we might try definitely tomorrow.
I love to swim.
Right.
Temperatures in the 80s tomorrow.
Love it.
Beautiful. We have a lot of stuff to do. I think that we should and shall get to it. How about that?
What? I plan on doing it.
All right, let's do it. Let's start off with the Yankees pinstripe report brought to you by Budweiser. So all the angst and anxiety over Gerrit Cole, I think might have been a little bit premature. I wouldn't say misplaced because for a while there he wasn't pitching great, but he wasn't pitching terribly. But everybody's judging him on a scale of a guy who makes $326 million, and that's fair. I mean, that comes with that price, the high expectations. And the only thing that kept me from panicking is that if you looked at what he did last year, this practically mirrored what he did last year. So he didn't start his 20-game winning streak until about mid-May, end of May, something like that, and then never lost. And that's exactly what we're seeing right here. This would be essentially maybe the beginning of June, and he's pitched great now, not good, great, the last three starts. And I think that what you're seeing now is a guy who's 7-0 with a 2.86 ERA. So his first six starts, he was 4-0, 2.75. Didn't look great, but, you know, got the job done. Now, then the next three was 0-3 with a 5.63. And the last three starts, 3-0, 0.86 ERA. And he's giving them, it seems like, seven innings each time. And I said it at the time, 9 years for a 29-year-old is an absolute bear. But once you get into that end of the pool, you know you're going to have to dive into the deep end. And in order to get Gerrit Cole, you were probably giving him two more years than you would give him in a perfect world. So how great is he going to be for the 9 years? Who knows? I mean, is he going to be throwing 98 miles an hour in the seventh inning when he's 37? I doubt it. But he also is a baseball technician, almost a professor. It looks like he can figure things out. And I think that he is as great as the judges and the Stantons and the Voits and the Torres could be, he could be the most significant weapon that the Yankees have moving into the offseason. And we've always said, and sometimes, and Don always brings this up and he's right, sometimes it's a little misplaced. The only thing that the Yankees were missing over the last 3 years is that one ace that they could go to and know that they're going to get a win. Now, the Yankees didn't hit in the postseason. They lost that game last year to the Astros because they didn't hit enough. They lost the series in 2017, the last series that Joe Girardi managed, because they didn't hit in Houston. The pitching was fine, but it is nice to have a pitcher that every time he goes out, you expect him to go seven innings and give up no or one run. The Mets have it, and Jacob deGrom. That's why he'd be a weapon in the postseason. But the Mets' problem, would they be able to score for him? And that's going to be the Yankee issue as well, because whomever you face, in all likelihood, is going to have pretty good pitchers as well. The Yankees have been stymied in October because the home runs seem to go away and they don't score at the same clip. But it's good to have this guy start a game one, Don. And I think this is the pitcher, the exact pitcher, that the Yankees thought they were getting when they gave him all that money. He has lived up to every aspect of his deal this year. Over 9 years, your guess, my guess, Cashman's guess, Steinbrenner's guess, I don't know. But this year, he's worth the money.
It's hard to say that, Michael, because I don't think he was brought here to do a thing in the regular season. He was brought here for the postseason. He got 20-0 during the year, win a Cy Young. What are Yankee fans going to say if he blows up in the first game of the playoffs and they don't win a championship? It's going to be this guy can't pitch in a big spot. which is ridiculous because he pitched in a big spot in his career, but you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Every pitcher that's ever been brought here, Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson, Mike Mussina, they were brought here not to win Cy Youngs, not to break any records during the regular season. They were brought here to be the piece to a championship. And the Yankees, as good as they've been over the last 20 years, have won exactly one championship since then. And many people believe it's because they don't have the Verlander, right? They don't have the Josh Burkett. They don't have the guy that's going to come in, shut you down, win a game, a big game. They just haven't had that. And the teams that they've faced and who have eliminated them have had that. That's why they gave Cole the 9 years. So until you do it in the postseason, Michael, I'm not sure that you can say he's been worth the money. Now, no. The Yankees may look at it that way, but I think Joe Fan out there, if over those 9 years he does not contribute to a championship, will they look upon that fondly?
No. But the only thing you could go by is, I guess he's had 12 starts this year, so 7-3-2, no decisions, is how he's pitched leading into the postseason. And so far, the pitcher that he was last year with the Houston Astros is the pitcher the Yankees get. This is what they got him for, Don. I'll give you the numbers. Last year in the postseason for the Astros, he started 5 games. He was 4-1, 1.72. That's what you get him for. But this can only be a prelude to that. We can only guess, well, look how he's pitching now. How should he pitch in the postseason? So he has pitched his best baseball the last 3 starts.
True.
And you would expect to leak that over into the postseason.
Well, let's break it down a little farther. And you have told me that it's not really right to talk about who they've played because it's baseball. It's different. Football, it's a different story. Baseball, it doesn't matter. But in this pandemic, it's been very strange because he has been hot, winning 3 straight games here down the stretch, 1 against Baltimore, 2 against Toronto. Now, Baltimore has been exposed, and Toronto's getting exposed. I don't think either of those two teams will be competing for a playoff spot if it's 162 games. All right? The last time he faced a playoff team was the Rays, and he lost that game. And the game before that was against the Braves, another playoff team. He lost the game. So I ask you, you see him a lot more than I do. You watch every pitch. You call every pitch. Has this turnaround been a byproduct of facing the same 2 teams that aren't very good compared to when he struggled? He was struggling against the likes of Tampa and Atlanta, where he faced them a lot. In that span, he beat Philly, no decision against Tampa, beat Boston, no decision against Tampa, lost to Atlanta, lost to Tampa. So is it a turnaround, or is it the byproduct of you are facing teams that are getting exposed here late in the shortened season, and now we want to see what's going to happen when you get to the playoffs and you're taking on better competition?
Either way you'll take it, though, at this point versus the alternative.
Right, because if he continued to struggle against these teams, you'd be somewhat worried. But I'm not on the level of a Matt Blake, the Yankee pitching coach, but I'm going to trust my eyes. And he's pitching better than he was in those middle games. He's not letting balls leak out over the plate. He's using all of his pitches. And the one thing I would tell you about the Blue Jays, Don, they wouldn't be a playoff team, but not because of their offense. They wouldn't be a playoff team because their pitching is terrible. But
Understood.
They get hit. Since they started playing in Salem Field, they lead the American League in runs scored. So that is a dangerous offense. And he completely neutered them in 2 starts, completely neutered them. So I think he's pitching better. He's certainly throwing harder than he was at the beginning of the year. And I think the ramp up during summer camp hurt him. But this is a great weapon for them to have, and they have to feel confident. Now, that leads me into the next thing. It's too early to make predictions. I don't know who the Yankees are going to play. There's a chance they could play the Twins at Yankee Stadium. They could play the Twins at Target Field. They might not even play the Twins. They might end up playing the White Sox. That's how close the Twins and the White Sox are. So, predictions, you have to make in the abstract. So I think one of the most important people, the important things for the Yankees moving into the postseason, the way this team was built, although they always have a crusher-type offense that they built, Gerrit Cole and the bullpen. And Major League Baseball surprised the Yankees and surprised every other team, because even Aaron Boone admitted, we did not know this, that there's not going to be off days in the postseason. Now, in the first round, the best of 3, that doesn't mean anything, because Gerrit Cole's going to just pitch 1 game. He's going to pitch the first game of that series. Tanaka, who's pitching tonight, is going to pitch the 2nd game of that series. And then the 3rd game is going to be Jay Happ or Davey Garcia, according to the matchup. That has no effect whatsoever then. None. And there's a couple of off days between that three-game set and the best-of-five ALDS. So Cole pitches game one, and then he pitches game one in the ALDS if the Yankees advance. But there's no days off in that ALDS. It's one, two, three, four, five. No travel day in a row. That means that if Gerrit Cole pitches twice in that series, the second time he has to pitch on short rest in game five. Now let's play it out even further. Yankees advance to the ALCS. There aren't that many days off between the DS and the CS, so here's what happens. If he pitches game five, he doesn't pitch again until game four. And then the only time that you're going to use him after that would be maybe out of the bullpen. He's not going to pitch on 2 days rest in game seven. So this is one of these postseasons where you want to get it done as quickly as possible. You could sweep. If you could win that best of five and three, because then you could set your pitching up. But if you go five games in the best of five, you have completely turned Gerrit Cole from a scud missile into a bottle rocket, because he can only pitch once.
Well, real quick, if they go five,
right,
there'll be 1 day off between series?
I think it's 1 day. Let me check right now. But now, I think it's 1 day.
And if that's the case, 1 day off, game one, game two, he can't do. You're not going to do 3 days rest.
All right, here it is. So you said after game five. Game five on the LDS would be the 9th.
Okay.
And game one in the LCS would be the 11th. So
right. It is 1 day.
He could probably pit. Let's see.
So could he play 11. Three? He couldn't play game three?
On short rest then.
But
then you're looking at him pitching on short rest three and short rest seven.
Right.
You've completely turned him into a different pitcher. Wow. These guys are creatures of habit. This is not Bob Gibson.
All right, but everybody's going through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so the Yankees have two top pitchers that you feel comfortable with in Cole and Tanaka.
Right.
Then it might get a little dicey. Is it going to be the kid? Is it going to be Happ, Montgomery? Like, where you go from there? And it probably not Montgomery. So, but what other teams got two good pitchers like that that aren't going to be in that kind of trouble? I mean, I think everybody is facing the exact same thing the Yankees are. Now, granted, it takes Cole out of the equation the way it would be under normal circumstances, but isn't their rotation, as questionable as it might be, still as good, if not better, than most of the teams they're going to face?
That is only answered in the affirmative if J. Happ continues to pitch the way he's pitched, and if Davey Garcia is the Davey Garcia that we saw before the last start that he had, where he didn't pitch well. Which leads me to the other thing that should be a strength for the Yankees, and it's not because of no days off. That's the bullpen. So in the past, the best of five would be 2-2-1 with days off. Now, in the last couple of years, it might have been 2-3. I'm not sure. But anyway, there was that day off where you could use, let's just use Chapman and Britton as an example. They're your two best pitchers. You could use them in game one and two, day off. You can use them in games 3, 4, and 5. Now, they don't like to go 3 days in a row, but they did with Tommy Canley last year, and if it's a postseason and it's a clinching game, you're going to do it. Now, you don't have a day off. So if you use Britton and Chapman in the first two games, they're not pitching game three no matter how big it is. They can't. And if they do pitch game three, then they're not pitching game 4 and 5. Same thing with the best of seven. Seven games in a row. So you've got to pick and choose who's closing your games.
And how do you and here's my question I ask you from a strategic standpoint. It's game one, and you get into the ninth inning or the eighth inning, wherever it is. What's the amount of runs where you feel comfortable enough to go, you know what? Instead of shoring up this game, we feel good enough about it to not use Britton or Chapman because we're trying to save them. Where do you draw that line?
It's a great question. I would say you've got to look at it. Well, 5 runs gives you breathing room. 3 runs, obviously, you're bringing in Britton and Chapman. 4 runs is the real wild card there. Do you trust mixing and matching with Ottavino, with Green? That's why the loss of Canley is so big with Loaiza. Those are the guys you're going to see. Can I get outs out of them so I don't have to get up Britton and I don't have to get up Chapman, because you've got to save your bullets for when you really need them. And
but you also can't afford to lose game one if you have it
right.
in hand.
You can't. And in the past, the way the travel days were and the off days, you could use them every single game in the postseason. Now that's impossible. So you've lost one of your biggest weapons. The Yankee team is built around the strength of its bullpen. There's one pitcher that the Yankees have that you feel comfortable going seven every time out. That's Gerrit Cole. So that helps you in that game one. But if he goes seven, you still got to get six more outs. And if it's a close game, those six right. outs are going to be three for Britton and three for Chapman. And that puts you in danger. Do you really have an effective duo then in game three if they also have to pitch in game two? Very complicated, but this was a real screwball that Major League Baseball threw at all the teams. But I think when you look at the Yankees, a team that's really predicated on their bullpen strength, it hurts them. It really
but
does
they had
hurt
to do
them.
It. They had to kind of, they have to kind of rush through this, right? I mean, you
yes.
can't prolong it. So this is the only, with no travel, there's almost no reason to have the days off, just because you want to try to get through this as quickly as possible, especially since they're going to be sequestered into kind of a pseudo bubble here for the rounds past the first one. So I think the Players Association probably loves the fact that they're doing this. So yeah, the Yankees might get a little screwed by it, but I think that there's the right thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. But, I'm not questioning them doing
yeah.
it, but I wonder if they told baseball and all the GMs, you know, you're not going to have off days. On like if they told them on October 31st, which is a trade deadline, do teams then go out and up the ante to get a starter? Because they know they're going to need another starter. They're going to need four and probably five starters. So if the Yankees have to use a fifth starter, are you comfortable throwing Jordan Montgomery out there?
So would they have made, if they knew about
great
this,
question.
Would they have gotten
Clevinger? I don't
Clevinger?
Know. They might have. Who knows? Maybe yeah, so you do up the ante. If you say, we're going to win this year, this is our window, then you're going out and you're giving the extra player to get Clevinger.
And this is the fault of baseball, because remember, we found out about the playoff format the day before the season started.
That's right.
And then it was like, it's a last-minute stuff you can kill them on, but I still think the right thing was done. Now, there's analytics for everything, and I'm sure all the analytic nerds out there are trying to figure out how to get through this stat-wise. But the one analytic that's got to change, Michael, is the third time through the lineup. You're going to have to try to get length out of your starting pitching. You don't have the luxury anymore of saying, you know what, I feel good going to my bullpen. We're going to take Tanaka out after five. No, you're probably going to have to push it. And maybe, Michael, because you're not going to have Cole until a while, do you just say, I'm going to need another 10 pitches from you? All right,
well,
you're going to have to start the eighth. You're going
to
have to do that, because there may be no tomorrow for you. I don't have the luxury of holding you and making sure you're fresher for the next time out, Peter. You know
right.
what? He's at 100 pitches through seven. I got to have you pitch the eighth. I'm going to have to try to get a complete game out of you. I can't keep going to
well,
my
here's
bullpen
the thing.
Every single day.
Well, here's the thing. You're not getting him fresh anyway. So why pull him in after the seventh to bring in Britton? When you could, if he still is pretty good, squeezing out another inning and saving at least a reliever for the next day.
All right, now let me serve that right back at you, because it's a good point. And you can see they're trying to stretch him out. I think the last time he pitched before last night, he threw 113 pitches most of the season. Last year they got him last night up to I think 111. So he can get to that point. But you're pushing him in game one to give you that eighth inning. All of a sudden, he's at 125 pitches. Remember, if this is the ALDS, the next time he's going to pitch is going to be on 3 days rest and a winner-take-all game five. That's a little bit of a gamble, because now you want a fresher pitcher, but you're going to force him to throw pitches that he hasn't thrown all year and then come back on short rest, which he hasn't done all year. I look at this postseason, and I laugh when people say this championship is not going to mean anything. This championship will mean as much as any other championship. Any team that can navigate all the things that they have to do to get to that point and win a championship, this has the same effect as the championship that the Royals won in 2015. Any team has won in any year. This is not a cheap championship. This is a rocky championship, and these players and front offices, they are facing things that no front office and player base has ever faced before. I'm not saying the Yankees. I'm saying all 16 teams that make it.
You know, I thought about this, Michael. You know, we always looked at the asterisks as a negative, right? Like it's showing you how something is not legitimate.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Maybe it needs to be there to acknowledge to the future how much more difficult this championship was to win. You know, people look at it and just say, oh, 60 games. Look how bogus this was. But if you see the inner workings of it, it tells you just how difficult this is going to be. So, Peter, don't you have to kind of acknowledge to the future masses that this, this looked like it was bogus and really easy to do? No, this was really hard.
Yeah, the asterisk will have a reverse purpose where it's like, no, this is an extra special championship. They not only survived a baseball tournament, they survived a life gamble.
Maybe we put a star rather than an asterisk.
An underline, a bold.
A bold. Ooh. Love a bold.
No, because it's really all of these sports, even football, just going through things you've never gone through before. Playing an entire football season without preseason, limited training camps, no OTAs, doing things virtually. Basketball and hockey being in a bubble for 2+ months in front of no fans. You know, think about the teams that are playing right now in the playoffs, how long they've been in there. There was footage of, I forget who it was, on the Vegas Golden Knights coming home to his family. It was like one of those viral videos you see when somebody returns from war.
Are you serious?
Because they hadn't seen their dad in like 2 months. So he comes into the door and they're all surprised. They run to him. I mean, listen, it's not the same as war, but you know what I'm saying? Imagine
it's totally, well, it's not the same as war, but it's not the same as any other hockey season either.
it's not the same as anything.
I'm glad you brought that up because there are a lot of baseball players that are complaining about this bubble that they're being forced to be in. Really? I get it. It's inconvenient. I understand. But the team that wins the NBA championship is going to be in a bubble for 3.5 months. So it's a bad look to complain about. It really is. But a lot of players are doing it.
But it shows you like what. So you're telling me that you're not taking that to the court or to the ice or to the field every day? You know, and you know, you've always talked about, Michael, how these athletes are creatures of habit. Everything that they know has been kind of taken from them and having to try to change the way it's done. So, yeah, this baseball season is going to look, 60 games. I keep going back to that Carlin conversation we had. This is bogus. This is a piece of trash, this championship. But now that we're living in it, tell me that this isn't going to be completely different, but almost the same as far as how difficult it's going to be to win that championship.
You could celebrate this title as hard as you've celebrated any other title. Really,
I think we'll see that they will, by the way. I think we will see from them in all of these sports that the celebration that they have is going to look different. I really do.
Well, that's the Yankee Pinstripe Report brought to you by Budweiser, Major League Beer. Did you guys see the comment by Mike Malone, the head coach of the Denver Nuggets? They pulled off a great win over the Lakers. Yeah. It's 2-1 now. And he said, our guys love the bubble. He said, I don't know what it's about, but they love it. They love being here. So if you don't look at it as a deterrent and you look at it, well, you know what? It's bonding. We're all hanging out. You know, playing ping pong where we're together constantly. You know what? Maybe it serves as a positive because if it wasn't for a great shot by Anthony Davis, they were up 2-1 against the Lakers.
It's amazing. But, you know, I think it affects the veterans more than the younger players. Younger players don't know any different, but veteran guys that have families, been in the league a long time, it's probably very, very strange. We saw, I bet you there's a book or some conversation after this is over that the problems LeBron had with this bubble. I bet you it's killing LeBron. He's almost said it, Peter.
Oh, yeah, he did early on.
You know,
his wife joined him like 2 weeks ago, but the kids have not come. So he's very close with it.
Well, and obviously, you know, Bronny may not be making him happy from outside the bubble.
Yeah, that wasn't cool. Peter and I had a long private discussion about that. I think I amused
Well, it
him.
Was, it, you know... Don't make the kid out to be a criminal, for God's sakes.
All I was saying, it's not that he doesn't have the right to be, Ebro kind of eviscerated him on the air under the guise of, like, you're really not making your dad's life any easier.
Right.
Your dad's already a big target, and you doing stuff like that is just feeding it to the people who hate your dad. Totally fair. I just was annoyed because I go on Twitter and I see it's trending with like 100,000 tweets, and when I see what it is... Don't get me wrong. Okay, yeah, I see why it's a news story on some level, but if you're a grown adult, Don, you have 2 children. I'm talking to you, Don LaGreca, and you have a weekend. You're spending more than 5 seconds thinking about that a 15-year-old smoked some weed in California?
I don't know how I feel about it.
I can't. I'm sorry. Bronny or Stevie or Johnny, 15-year-old smoking weed ain't getting my attention for more than 10 seconds.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
I look at this postseason and I laugh when people say this championship is not going to mean anything. This championship will mean as much as any other championship. Any team that can navigate all the things that they have to do to get to that point and win a championship, this has the same effect.
We always looked at the asterisk as a negative. Maybe it needs to be there to acknowledge to the future how much more difficult this championship was to win.
Maybe we put a star rather than an asterisk.
Or an underline, a bold.
This is the Michael K. Show.
A bold. Ooh. Love a bold.
On 98.7 ESPN.
You know, just to piggyback on the rejoin that RJ put together, I think I've said this on the air, and if I haven't, I should. I do admit when I'm wrong. And remember when they were negotiating with the owners, and I said that the players should take a percentage of what they make because the owners are making less money because there's no fans in the stands. I was dead wrong. Dead wrong. To see what these players are going through to stay on the field, to completely take their life and push it aside, not go out, not do anything. A lot of people in the world have done this. And also, going on the road, going in hotels, and risking any kind of contracting of COVID-19, they deserve every dime they're making. They should not make a percentage of what they make. Yes, they should make prorated. They should make 60 games out of 162. That I agree with. But I thought they should make even less money because there are no fans in the stands because the owners are going to take a hit. No. No. I think anybody that's working through this shouldn't have to take any kind of a haircut. It's ridiculous. This is really tough, really difficult, really sobering, dystopian in so many ways. Players deserve every dime they get, every single dime they get. So I was wrong. Because I was spouting that a lot back then, and I was wrong.
I believe I was on the other side of that.
You were. You were.
I'm very proud of myself. I think I really nailed it.
So Kevin Durant talks an awful lot. Good for him. I mean, we want
athletes to talk. Sure.
Yeah, we want them. But sometimes you got to check yourself at the door if you're going to say stuff that really makes you look bad. So Kevin Durant was on the Joe Budden podcast over the weekend. Now, we all heard the story of Donwell House. Donwell House. I think that's how you pronounce the name of the Houston Rockets. Supposedly had a little something going on with a COVID tester, and he got thrown out of the bubble. And the Rockets were still playing. They're down 3-1, but they were still playing. So, this is what Durant said on Budden's podcast. If you've been in a bubble away from some action for 3 months, I mean, you can't blame them, dog. And I heard it was no females at all outside of COVID testers. The maids were all men. There was nothing but men around. After a couple of months, you down 3-1? Nah, he said. I don't give a bleep no more, man. So he's cool with that. And he goes on to say, do you really think the recreational activities that these guys are accustomed to, and that's in quotes, are going to be compromised for 3 months? You really, really think they're honoring a bubble for 3 months? Yeah, Kevin, most of them are.
Yeah.
That's why they haven't had any positive COVID test. And that does tell you something about Kevin Durant. So he's saying that if this was a bubble next year where he's healthy and the Achilles fully healed, he wanted to have his recreational activities over actually playing for the Nets. That's a bad look to say that. It just is.
It's bad. And Michael, the evidence isn't there because we've seen teams that we saw the Denver Nuggets twice come back from 3-1 down to win a series. So if everybody's thinking, I just want to get the heck out of here, then everybody down 3-0 would have gotten swept, and that didn't turn out to be the case. Some teams fought back and tried to win. I saw it in both leagues where you say to yourself, like if you're betting, like, all right, you know, the Capitals are down 3-0. I mean, they're not going to win. They probably just want to go home. They're going to mail in. No, they win game four. Knowing they're not going to be able to win the series, but they still win game four. We saw it with the Bucks too. Right? So there's no evidence that anybody mailed anything in at all.
He goes on to say, from what I was told, people are already working around it, meaning not having female companionship. You can't have family, but you can have a trainer or a massage therapist. So what I've been told is that there are some pretty hot massage therapists come through. A couple of trainers who, you know, they're a backdoor is what I'm saying. This is what's on your mind, Kevin? Not winning a championship? This would be on your mind getting action? Boy, is that a little bit of a window into what you're about? I'm sorry. Yeah, I get it. So you like sex. I'm sure everybody does. But you're gonna sacrifice the. You think LeBron James likes being in a bubble? He said he doesn't. But you do it for the greater good of your team, and you're getting paid a lot of money. This is what Kevin Durant's concerned about. So I wonder if Kevin Durant was okay to play if he would have agreed to go with the Nets in the bubble. Seems like the only thing he's concerned about, recreational activities. Come on, Kev. Sometimes it's better not to say anything if you're going to say something like that.
And listen, do I think it's an issue? I'm sure it is. These are young guys that are used to a certain lifestyle. But to just say it openly, kind of, you're right, hold you under the scrutiny of, boy, you seem to really have your priorities all out of whack. And on top of that, Michael, there is that speculation that, hey, he probably could have come back, right, from a healing standpoint, and it was just decided, no, we're going to wait. Is this the reason why? Because he just didn't want to come back and play in a bubble?
No, I don't want to get gross here, but fire up YouPorn if you're that desperate.
Oh,
I mean, you can
gosh,
get
sure
through
am.
A couple of months.
Listen, at first I wanted to defend him because it sounded like just some joking around. But then, as he went in a little bit further, he sort of made things a little bit worse for himself. Because he actually made it sound like he was serious. Like, he actually tried to argue the point. It's one thing to be like, come on, man, no one's knocking off all their recreational activity for 3 months. Ha, 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 ha. But then he sounds like he really tried to explain it.
Right. I think he was serious.
I'd be curious to hear the context, but...
Yeah, I mean, is there any chance that this was just a complete goof?
That's not the way it was covered.
All right. Well, that doesn't... Just the way it was covered doesn't...
I mean,
sure,
I chose...
The words are what the words are. I agree with Peter. At first, I thought he was just joking around, but then he's talking about massage therapists and stuff like that.
I mean, listen, the tone of Joe's podcast is generally lighthearted, but...
See, that's when you get good answers. You relax people.
He does. Joe does a great job.
So my point is, it was okay to break the protocol, A, right? B, endanger all of your teammates. C, perhaps cost the league hundreds of millions of dollars if something came out of control. Because you were down 3-1, what's the big deal? You're going to give up 3-1? If you're in a series, Kevin, that's where you're up 3-1, you give up? Or you're down 3-1? So this guy was so desperate for female companionship that he gave up because his team was down 3-1. I mean, what a bad look to say that's cool. Kevin and Kyrie are going to be very interesting next year. Very interesting.
Oh, well, listen, let's be clear.
I mean, Steve Nash has himself quite a job here.
Next year could be so incredible for Nets fans and could also be one of the most iconic S shows in New York sports
history. Well, you're right. There is no medium. There's no happy medium here.
No, right? No, because they could be good. They could be good and still have sort of a media S storm, if you will. Don, I would disagree, because the worst case scenario that you're talking about is they're bad and it's just a disaster. There is a middle ground where they play really well on the court, but there's just a constant story with them. That is definitely possible.
And they're not going to be able to be reined in by the Nets people. Because players have a direct portal to the public with podcasts and social media. And these guys never had an opinion that they don't want to articulate. In another podcast, he came out and said, I don't want to go to the Knicks because I don't want to be their savior. I didn't like the fact that the writers were writing about that I was going to be their savior. I don't know. Some players like that whole, you know, I want to be the savior. I want to be the guy that gives the Knicks their first championship since 1973. That kind of is attractive. So in that comment that Kevin made, He took the path of least resistance. He comes to New York, but goes to a team that has no pressure on it at all. Because no matter how many years the world goes on from here, the Knicks are always going to be ahead of the Nets. They just are. They might not be as good as the Nets, but the Knicks have a higher profile. Like the Giants have a higher profile than the Jets. The Yankees have a higher profile than the Mets. The Rangers have a higher profile than the Devils and the Islanders. No matter what happened, the Islanders right. won 4 Stanley Cups in a row. The Devils won 3 in a number of years, and still the Rangers are the hockey team in New York. So he took the path of least resistance, and I wonder what that says.
But there's stuff here. There's definitely stuff here to concern you. And I
agree with that, Michael. He's not going to have the pressure that he would have if he was a Nick. But there's still the pressure of being one of the best players in the NBA, getting together with another player. And if they don't win, maybe there won't be the media scrutiny on the Nets, but there'll certainly be media scrutiny on him, right?
You would think so, because he's one of the top three players in the world.
And maybe a championship is a little much, because there's still a lot of teams to go through in the East, like the Celtics, like the Bucks, like the Heat. But, God, if they're like a one-and-done team or very average team, he'll get destroyed. He will.
Well, Eli in Newark wants to defend him. So let's go to the 98.7 T-Mobile listener line, where sports fans get the spotlight. The spotlight is now on Eli in Newark. Okay, Eli, you got the floor.
Hey, guys. First, I just want to say y'all got a great show.
Thanks.
And I've been listening for a long time, but Kevin Durant was talking about House. He wasn't talking about himself.
Oh, I know he was talking about House. But, I mean, if he's saying about House, isn't he saying about himself?
No, he was kind of like joking on House, because he made it seem like House didn't care because he was down 3-1. But like Peter said, the podcast is very lighthearted. Like, and Peter knows that because, you know, they're kind of friends themselves.
I actually started the podcast with Joe, but keep going.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. You know, I know Peter, I know. But, yeah, they were just lighthearted. They were literally just joking the whole interview.
Okay.
And that was really not about him per se. He was like, why did House do that? He was like, I don't know why he did it. And then he proceeded on to say, hey, man, he was probably down 3-1, and said, hey, I don't want to do it no more, and got a girl again.
That's the thing, Michael. That's why I worry about when those stories pull quotes.
Oh, okay, but how do you take this quote, Eli? Do you really think the recreational activity that these guys are accustomed to are going to be compromised for 3 months? You really, really think they're honoring a bubble for 3 months? So he believes
but
that.
But Michael, what if he's saying that about House?
Other players would think that.
But he doesn't.
Like,
he's above that.
Players.
That's what he's saying. Yeah. I think he's mocking them.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah,
I
he's
don't,
mocking them.
Well, Eli, you heard it. I didn't hear it.
Let's just get the audio. Let's just listen to it.
All right,
are we allowed to play it?
I don't know. Call your buddy. Budden.
Bud loves the show. He won't mind.
Let's go to Mike in New York. Mike.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I'm a New York Knicks fan, and I've always thought KD was soft, and I feel like him saying this is such a KD thing for him to say, and I think that Russell Westbrook should come to the Knicks this year and, you know, have the better team than the Nets, and really have the last laugh between, you know, the rivalry that those two have had over there.
Well, Mike,
career.
I love the fact that you like the Nets or the Knicks, but if Russell Westbrook came to the Knicks, he would not be better than the Nets. He has to have players around him.
Yeah, they need more than what they have now.
And also, I hate to say it, but what has Russ done so far?
True. Let's go to Matt and Selden. Matt.
Hey, I just wanted to... I think you guys are totally off on the Kevin Durant thing, because the guy who he was talking about, the female, wasn't she a COVID tester?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so obviously she was negative. So how is that such a big deal if a guy just wants to have a little fun? I think you guys are just middle-aged men who are out of touch with the youth.
No, you're missing a major part of it, though, dude. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to have the contact with any people. That's why he was kicked out. So whether you just look at it as having a little fun or not.
We're middle-aged people. By the way, I wish I lived to 120, but right. That has nothing to do with it. The NBA rules kicked him out, so he must have been doing something wrong.
Well,
right?
You said they could go to porn or something. That's for, like, old men.
What?
They can go where?
You porn is for old men. Oh, okay. Well, that's your point. But you know what?
Yeah, sure.
They're because there's no 20-year-old that's doing that. But my point is this, okay?
That guy was such a loser.
The NBA suspended him because what you did, you have no idea if the tester is negative. How do you know? You have no idea. They're testing doesn't mean they're negative. You hope that they've tested negative. But the rule is that you can't. So you're going to do it. Westbrook, your teammate's not allowed to do it. Harden, your teammate's not allowed to do it. But you do it. You put your teammates at jeopardy, and you put the league in jeopardy, and you put the whole postseason in jeopardy. Yeah, that's smart. I would defend House. Come on, man. That was some call. These are your friends, Peter.
He wasn't my friend.
Yeah, it felt like it was.
He listens to the Joe Budden podcast. That has nothing to do with it. Actually, he doesn't even say he listens to the Budden podcast. He was a troll.
Hey, join us every Football Friday this season for our Cover 3 Trivia Contest. This is new, where we'll give a lucky caller the chance to prove their fandom and win up to $100 to PC Richard and Son and more. It's brought to you by PC Richard and Son. For appliances, TVs, electronics, and mattresses, shop in-store or online and get free delivery or curbside pickup at any location. PC Richard and Son. Shop safe. Shop local. All right, so we've got the audio, I'm told, on my my wide orbit, as we like to say in the business.
Mm-hmm. Calling things what they are.
Can you fire that off for me, RJ? Because I have a hard time scrolling up to that on my computer.
Yo, what do you think about dudes trying to fuck the COVID testing girl in the bubble?
Yo, you've been in a bubble away from some action for 3 months. I mean, you can't blame them, dog.
Yeah.
I get it. That was like the first thing people were talking about. Like, yo, so they can't have no like women friends coming.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And I heard there was no females at all outside of that. It was like the maids all men. Like everybody, it was just nothing but men around. So after a couple months, you down 3-1? Nah.
You down 3-1? This is over.
He said, I don't give a fuck no more, man.
Word.
Yo.
Sounds lighthearted to me.
It's definitely lighthearted. He also did not completely say like he's putting it on house. But he also is completely joking.
And also, you can have females there. The last 3 weeks, they've allowed to have their wife there or their girlfriend. But one, I guess, is not enough, right?
And I understand that they make a lot of money, they're very attractive, and I'm sure they can have a lot of women. But doesn't necessarily mean they can have any woman they want.
Dre and Chubbs wrote that they were down 2-1 when he didn't play because of this. Then he got sent home after that.
Yeah.
And then Rob writes on Twitter, the worst part about the whole situation is that House was caught doing this. And by the way, he has or had a wife girlfriend with kids, too. And that's how she found out about this.
That's in the words of Joe Girardi, I just want to say that is not what you want.
It's not what you want. Am I right?
Particularly for her. Not what you want.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
And we will go to Chris in Manhattan. Chris, what's up?
Hi, Mike. Hi, Peter. Hi, Don. You guys do a spectacular job.
Thanks.
Spectacular. Thank Mike, I got to ask you a question.
Okay.
The other night, I'm listening to the Yankee game. I watch it on TV. And LeMahieu was up. And I thought you said, I could be wrong, maybe I heard you wrong, that you said if he wins the batting title, he would be the only guy to win it in both leagues. Did you say that?
Yes, I did. And I know where you're going because the previous history is Ed Delahanty won it.
No, how about Frank Robinson?
He didn't win the batting title in each league.
Why? Didn't he win the Triple Crown in both leagues?
No, he won the Triple Crown with the Orioles. He never won it with the Reds.
I thought he won it, Michael. Check that. I thought he won it with the Reds.
No, the only one, I will check, but he did not win a Triple Crown with the Reds from what I know. But the reason that this comes up a lot is that Ed Delahanty won the batting title in the National League and the American League. And his American League title, about 100 years later, was taken away because of the fact that people went back, baseball historians, and checked box scores, and I forget who got the title instead of Delahanty, but he got this. Another batter was given a couple more hits, and he ended up winning the title. But Ed Delahanty, go read about him, Don. What an awful ending to his life.
Really?
He was drunk on a train.
Oh, my God.
With his teammates, and really, like, disturbingly drunk. And he was known as a drinker and a gambler. And somebody threw him off the moving train over the Niagara Falls. That was the end of his career and life.
Well, I would say his life ended, but he still was able to squeeze two more seasons out.
Wait. Hold on. Do you
that's
want to
awful.
The whole story here is early July 1903.
Mm-hmm.
He was kicked off a train by the train's conductor for being drunk and disorderly.
You know that.
The conductor said that he was brandishing a straight razor and threatening passengers after he consumed 5 whiskeys. After being kicked off the train, Delahanty started his way across the International Railway Bridge connecting Buffalo and Fort Erie and fell or jumped off the bridge.
Yeah, that's not what you want.
No.
I would say it's too soon, but I think 117 years, you're allowed to say that.
I would think. I see if you guys agree with me. That's a movie that has not been made. I don't understand. That would be so dark. Almost like a Stephen King novel.
Well, but if that... was there a lot of other dark stuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He led a dark life. Keep reading Wikipedia. You'll find a lot of stuff. John, did you look up the Frank Robinson stuff? Because I'm sure he didn't win a triple crown with the Reds.
No, he didn't win a batting title with the Reds either. He did hit .342 with the Reds in 1962, but did not lead the league. I was going to see who was the league leader, how close he came.
Official stats, according to Major League Baseball, is that LeMahieu would be the first because they took away one of Delahanty's titles.
Delahanty has another interesting distinction in terms of baseball.
His brothers played too, right?
The largest group of siblings ever in Major League Baseball.
What, five?
Five.
That's why I had a straight razor just to eat at the family table. Again, too soon?
Only 35 when he died.
He was 4 points away from the batting title in 62.
Frank.
Tommy Davis batted .346 that year and led the National League.
And then in 1965, they traded him to the Orioles because they said he was done. He wasn't done.
No, he was not done.
So two players have come out and said that the Jets, I'm paraphrasing here, don't practice hard enough. And that they don't do the things right in practice, and obviously that spills over into games. That's quite a reflection on a coach.
Sure.
So Gase comes out and says, if they have a problem with the way we practice, they should, I have an open door, they can come tell me anything. That's not the point, Adam. Joe Judge didn't like the way the Giants practiced, so you know what he did? He stopped practice and started all over again. He makes them run laps. Yeah, does it sound like it's somewhat childish? Maybe. But in the first two games, the Giants seemed very disciplined and not prone to penalties. The wrong answer for it's amazing. It's like Gase is working off a handbook on things not to do as a head coach. If they have a problem with the way we practice, they can go to my office. No, you're supposed to see that they're not practicing well. If the players see it, why don't you see it? And why don't you correct it before a player? Imagine if a player, a borderline player, goes into his office and says, we're not practicing well. He's going to get released. That's what football's about. It would have to be a star like Sam Darnold to do it.
Right. But, I mean, Bradley McDougal apparently had said it, and then it was
Williamson said it again on an interview on The Fan yesterday.
Who confirmed it on The Fan yesterday. Now, you could make the case that Williamson's got an axe to grind because he's not starting. So maybe he's upset about that. But I don't know. But you're right. But that could be, if you want to defend Gase, that's somebody who should be starting, isn't starting, and maybe is upset about it. But this is going to start to happen, guys, because I do think that there's a little brainwashing going on where Gase is the man. Everybody believes he's the man. Sam believes he's the man because they got nothing really else to go on. But as the losses begin to pile up, the confidence is going to start to get lost here. And that's something that you have to pay attention to. What happens, Michael, when teams start losing? All of a sudden, the injuries begin to pile up. Are guys getting hurt more, or are they like, listen, I could come back, but I'm not coming back to this dumpster fire. I'm going to stay out another couple of weeks.
Or and there's a lot of sniping of this sort, too.
Yeah, and I think this is going to start to happen because, guys, it just comes down to this. We've been beating a dead horse. I get it, but it's important because they're losing games here. They've looked embarrassing. There's nobody even close to them right now. I heard, you know, DCR was talking about this the other day. Who right now, Cincinnati's ranked the 31st team in the league. The Jets are 32. Cincinnati's a much better team. I saw a competitive team last Thursday against Cleveland, right? They hung in their first game of the season, missed a chip shot field goal to force overtime. So who's the second worst team in football? Who? The Giants have at least been competitive. They're 0-2. There's plenty of 0-2 teams, but who has been this bad? So
strangely, that, the Eagles have been this bad.
But yeah, no, that is true. But I don't know if they've been.
God hates me.
I don't think they've been nearly as bad as the Jets. Jets have not been competitive. Because stop with the whole 10-point loss against Buffalo. That was.
Oh, by the way, the Jets have been much worse than the Eagles. I know you're joking, but
yeah, much worse. Jets have not been competitive.
So that's the scary thing, isn't it? And we believe that this was a team that might be around 500. And I guess they still could be based on 0-2. We've seen 0-2 teams win Super Bowls before. But this team has just not been competitive. And the schedule kind of dictates that there's not going to be a lot of wins. They haven't played the Patriots yet, right? They got to play the Patriots twice. The Patriots look like they're actually pretty good. So this is going to start to happen, Michael. Guys are going to start to lose their confidence. Guys are going to start to say some things. And I guess if you're a Jet fan, good, right? Because you're going to try to convince Chris Johnson a change has to be made. These are the things that might lead to that because the fan base might revolt here. Now, you can't see it in the stands, but they're getting beat up right now. More than any team in sports right now, the Jets have been beat up the last couple of weeks. Does Johnson want to see that continue? Is he going to still believe that a genius is leading them?
If he keeps listening to him, you mentioned the Patriots. Has anybody seen the picture from today?
Yes.
Of Bill Belichick on the Zoom call meeting with the media? I'm sorry. Listen, I can't cast aspersions on anybody's looks because, you know, I'm no oil painting. But he looks like he just crawled out of a rock, from under a rock. He looks, again, no offense to hobos. He looks like a hobo.
And that is, by the way, offense to hobos taken.
The Port Authority.
Offense to hobos taken.
They should. I mean,
hobos
I can't
worldwide.
He is so secure in his being, Peter, that he's okay looking like that publicly. I mean, take a look. It looks like he didn't shower. He didn't bathe. He didn't comb his hair. He's got holes in his sweatshirt. It's unbelievable. I wish I was that secure with myself.
It's such a bad commercial. I even forget about
Subway.
Some laundry detergent, right? Where the guy goes on this date with the girl and he takes the sweater off and the shirt's like half washed. Like the collar's gone. It's just like hanging down his chest. Have you seen that commercial?
Yeah, they call it bacon collar.
That's what he has. Actually, he looks like he just got mugged.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a mugshot.
Or
he mugged someone.
No, if there was a fight, he looks like the loser.
Yeah, that's what he... You know what he's the equivalent of?
What?
Bill Belichick physically is the equivalent of that neighborhood cat that just gets in fights and loses.
But he doesn't lose.
But I know. But it looks like he physically loses. Like, you know one of Heathcliff's friends on the cartoon? Heathcliff, no one should terrorize the neighborhood. And Heathcliff had those friends. He looks like one of Heathcliff's lowly friends. Don, it's sort of how I imagine your friends, as Michael describes them.
As Michael describes them.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's
reality.
No, I'm not saying it's reality. But the version of your friends that Michael describes, sort of heathens, ne'er-do-wells.
How close to reality is it, Don? Come on, let's all be honest with each other. We're friends.
No, they don't look like this. I don't have a friend that looks like this. I've had friends that did talk.
Neither one of the Stark brothers looks like this?
One of the Stark brothers is an accomplished lawyer.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess not. Well, so, I mean, he's an accomplished head coach, but...
Stark brothers, they have very tight looks.
Poof!
You know what happened 19 years ago today? The football world changed 19 years ago today.
19 years ago today?
19 years ago today.
September 23rd, 2001?
Today, 19 years ago.
Today, 19 years ago.
I was going to think Tom Brady checked into a football game.
There you go. Replacing injured Drew Bledsoe, and the rest is history. Six-time Super Bowl champion, four-time MVP in the Super Bowl, three-time MVP of the league, 14-time Pro Bowler, G-O-A-T, GOAT.
They beat this.
And only the Jets would be the team that injured the guy that he took over for.
I know. And this picture that we're analyzing about Belichick is what he would look like had Brady not gotten in the game. Like how Bill would look today. Like Bill doesn't look like a guy that's won a bunch of Super Bowls and is on his way to the Hall of Fame. He looks like the hairless cat in The Secret Life of Pets. You know what I'm talking about? That alley cat?
So you're going with the theme, but just a different one. Different cat.
Yes. Same theme, though. But that does not look like a winner. And I understand he doesn't care, but what? How does a shirt wear like that?
I don't know.
Like, right, well, I've had shirts for a long time that I wear to bed, and they start to kind of come apart at the seams or whatever. But they look like cigarette burns.
By the way, I want to ask this question. I asked it the other day of my agent Dipperstein. He thought it was one of the great questions asked of all time. Because I'm a journalist, okay? You guys are aware that Adam Sandler dresses in public as repug as anyone who's ever walked the face of the planet.
Yes.
My question is, Don, do you believe Sandler is sort of putting on a shtick at this point? Or he is truly someone like a lot of men, you know, like what we're like at heart when we're like 9 years old? You're just thinking comfort. At every moment, I want my comfy sweatshirt. I want my comfy sweatpants. And because he's so rich and successful, he doesn't care.
I wish I could be like Adam Sandler. He has such total confidence in the person that he is and doesn't care about what people think.
That's what I think it is.
That's what it is. I think that's what it is with Bill Belichick. I've seen Adam Sandler in person. He's a good-looking guy, but he's not a movie star because he looks like Brad Pitt. He's just a comfortable dude.
He's Brad Pitt next to Bill Belichick.
But sometimes you wonder, because I think Peter's on to something here, because it was always my theory about Pearl Jam. Like Pearl Jam never put on airs. They didn't care. They wore flannel and jeans, right? And then you become so big, that becomes the fashion. That becomes what's in. So then you wonder, are they dressing ironically, or is that really how they dress? Like, so is Belichick went from just, I just want to be comfortable, to now it's become his look, and now he actually puts thought into looking this ridiculous?
This is where I miss the yes guys really being in studio, because I would love nothing more than a montage of some of Sandler's worst looks in public.
Well, let's tie this all together with Belichick and Sandler, because in my starring turn in Grown Ups 2,
oh yeah,
they actually dress me as a Bill Belichickian coach.
Is that what the look was?
I'm wearing a hoodie with the sleeves cut off. It's Belichickian. Coach Romy was based on Bill Belichick.
And what a role it was.
I still don't believe Adam has not like turned that into a franchise.
You mean you're a character? Did you have him on center stage or no?
Yes, that's how I got the role.
So jealous. That's a great interview.
He was good. He's a really good guy.
I was going to ask you one center stage question.
Yeah.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
I know it's a tough question to ask in 2020, but don't ignore all of anything around it and just answer the question. At any point, did you guys pursue and make any progress with Woody Allen, or do you not even bother?
Never bothered, I don't think.
Didn't think he'd ever do an interview like that?
Because, I mean, there are people that I'd like to have on that you're going to have to ask the difficult questions to, and they don't want those difficult questions asked.
Which is probably why they don't. But is he a Yankee fan?
He's a Knicks fan. I don't know if he's a baseball fan.
But he doesn't come to the stadium. Got it. I looked for Paul Simon last time I was at the stadium. Couldn't find him.
Yeah, I can hook you guys up if you like.
Me and Simon?
Yeah.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. The Michael K. Show.
This is what Durant said on Budden's podcast.
You've been in a bubble away from some action for 3 months. I mean, you can't blame him, dog.
Yeah, I get it.
You think LeBron James likes being in a bubble? But you do it for the greater good of your team, and you're getting paid a lot of money. This is what Kevin Durant's concerned about? Sometimes it's better not to say anything if you're going to say something like that. I don't want to get gross here, but fire up you porn if you're that desperate. Oh, I mean, you can get through a couple of months.
The movie Hard Bodies, 1984.
This is the Michael K. Show.
You porn is for old men. Okay, well, that's your point.
Yeah, sure.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Boy, we have really learned a lot today. I mean, really a lot. I don't know how we move forward.
There's a lot.
We will. You think so?
Yeah.
Who's the most likely team to win this week? The Giants or the Jets, Don?
I'll say Giants because, God, the 49ers are just decimated, aren't they?
They really are. And they're afraid of that turf.
What's the number? Do we have spreads? I didn't look at anything.
You want spreads?
Well, what do you care? Yes, you're going to get all three anyway.
I got you. I'll give you spreads.
And those that are just joining us, by the way, Peter is going to pay off his bet from last year. He is going to eat the crickets, three of them. Is it?
We'll see.
The 4 o'clock hour or the 5 o'clock hour, Don? What do you think is the best?
You said five.
I said five, but you know, five is always a big hour anyway. So let's jack up the number 4 hour. What do you think?
I like it.
4 o'clock. He's going to eat it.
Them.
They smell gross. By the way, update though. Bear does not mind them. He ate two.
Okay.
You know that?
Yeah, but he hesitated at first, which worries me.
Yesterday during the show, our GM Tim McCarthy said you should at least have him use dipping sauce. So he's trying to save you.
No. I don't understand why.
I'd like dipping
sauce.
We
have to try to make these things as easy as possible. You lost a bet. I don't get
Don,
it.
Don. How about salt?
No.
Nothing? I can't have
nothing.
A little. No sriracha.
No.
Honey mustard. Vinegar. Ketchup.
Just give us the lines.
All right. What do you want? What game you want?
The Jets and the Giant game.
The Giants
what we
are,
were talking about.
Got it. The Giants are 3.5-point dogs to the broken and decrepit San Francisco 49ers.
Okay.
And the New York football Jets are only 10.5-point dogs to the Colts. Oh, my God.
Wow.
You know what?
Without even thinking
about it, I'm grabbing that 10.5.
Oh, that's very attractive.
That line is basically saying we don't believe this is a professional football
team. Right. We believe this is peewee.
I just want to humor you guys for a second. The next biggest line this week would be that I see there are 2 6.5-point lines after that game. The Chargers are favored 6.5 at home against the Panthers. And, my team, Washington, is a 7-point dog at Cleveland.
And this is when the Jets, their coach said they're in hyperdrive this week. So if they didn't go into hyperdrive, what would it be, 15?
10.5 at Indy.
Can you just imagine if that spread's right?
What they would be at New Orleans?
Three straight weeks of being non-competitive. Another loss, right, Michael, in which they lost by two possessions or more.
Here's what's scary, too. The Colts are okay. Not great. What happens if they played a really great team? Would it be like 17.5?
If they were at Seattle, they'd be a 16.5, 17-point dog, no?
I think New Orleans would be the worst line they could get. Just because the playing at the Superdome. Or at Kansas City?
Their schedule's not doing them any favors, but more importantly, the way they're playing's not doing them any favors. So who do you think's more? I guess the Giants have a better chance to win than the Jets.
Well, because I think the Giants have at least been competitive, right?
And San Francisco's ravaged with injuries.
You're taking on a backup quarterback. They've lost their tight end. They've lost their best wide receiver. They've lost their best defender. Listen, I'm not even sure I'm going to touch that game. You just said which one has the better chance. Well, Vegas clearly thinks the Giants have a touchdown better chance of winning their game than the Jets do. Can you imagine the Jets getting blown out at Indianapolis, and then you've got a short turnaround Thursday at home against Denver?
They can beat Denver. Drew Locke's out. They can beat Denver.
I don't know how you can say, unless we start to see something different, that there's anybody that they should beat. They went into this season where the only game at the beginning of the year that they were predicted to be favored was the home game against Miami. Right now, you cannot tell me that there's a game they'll be favored this year based on how they played the first two games of the season.
But the Miami game, they still might be favored. But Miami played well against the Bills. They played better against the Bills than the Jets did.
How do you favor the Jets going forward based off of what you just saw? Because last year's a memory, right? What does last year matter? They're going to look at what's happening right now. You've been non-competitive in two games. I mean, how can – now, again, things change. I don't expect the Jets to go 0-16, and I think they will play better going forward because you can't play much worse. But honestly, how can you say that they'll beat Denver?
They have a chance is what I'm saying.
I'll tell you what. If they lose to Indianapolis, then they would have to thank their lucky stars nobody's in that building Thursday.
And you know, Rich Samini, who covers the Jets, I think Rich has covered the Jets for about 36 years,
something like that.
And he said there aren't going to be any imminent firings, but they have to start winning soon. I don't quite know what that means. So could there be firings at the halfway point? I just don't see it happening because, you know, Chris Johnson's in full-bloom love with Gase.
Other than just giving the fan base a pound of flesh, what does it do?
You know what it does? You probably make Greg Williams the coach. He finishes strong, and then you kind of almost like pigeonholed into keeping him. Maybe the Browns should have.
I don't know. Is that good to have a defensive coach be your head coach with the maturation of your quarterback?
If you have a great offensive coordinator, like the Giants hired a really established offensive coordinator who was a coach for a long time.
I would think here's the best case scenario for Jet fans. Lose to Denver. You're 0-4, let's say, if they lose to Indianapolis. And then you've got the long week. It's not a bye, but you don't play again until the following Sunday. Maybe that could be the opportunity. If not, then their bye's in week 11.
But you're right, Don. What does it do? I mean, if he's going to stink, let him stink the whole way so it's a greater case for it. Because if you look at the whole body of work, is it fair to fire somebody after 20 games? I don't think it is.
But they
don't have a lot of talent. Right. I don't like the fact that they're not disciplined. I don't like their unimaginative offense. But there's not much there. I mean, C.J. Mosley opted out. They traded their best player. Their wide receiving core has been decimated. Le'Veon Bell is out. It's hard to judge the coach right now.
All right, but if he starts losing the team, and we've already seen a little bit of it through 2 weeks, and you get to midway point of the season and they're just flat out not trying, then you almost have to do something just so you don't damage the guys that you have moving forward. I mean, you don't want to destroy the confidence of Sam to where you think having him here is a detriment to his growth. Then you got to make some sort of a move. But I would think this will all come at the end of the season. And I would not be surprised if they will start to play a little better. I mean, you can't be this bad. If they play like this the rest of the year, that's expansion team bad.
Yep.
So they've got to play better at some point.
You almost expect John McKay to coach them. Let's go to the 98.7 T-Mobile listener line where sports fans get their spotlight. Let's go to Nick in New York. Nick, talk to us.
Hey, fellas. This show's going wild places today, but it's hilarious, and I think you guys are doing a great job as usual.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. I have a couple stories, so if you could just give me a minute. Mr. K, I've been trying to get through for years now, and I really appreciate me getting through. Peter, I actually met Sandler in 06. It was outside the NBC studios. He was dressed in regular clothing. He was like the most humble man I've ever met in my life. Really cool dude.
Wait, Peter?
No, yeah. Sandler. Adam Sandler.
I thought you met Peter.
Yeah, I met Sandler.
Oh.
I was talking to Peter.
Yeah, that didn't sound like Peter at all.
That's not true. And was he dressed hobo or Jace?
He was dressed in, like, what do you have on, jeans and a T-shirt, and he actually called my grandmother a sweet woman, so after that, I was, like, a huge fan of him. Really cool dude.
And, you know, of all the, like, over 200 guests at Center Stage, he probably dressed down, he and Alex Rodriguez dressed down the most. He had on a corduroy shirt untucked.
Corduroy shirt?
Yeah.
I didn't know that's a thing.
What else you have, Nick?
For second
years. Yeah, I actually met you too, Mr. K, at the old Yankee Stadium.
Please, call me Michael, Nick. Please, my dad's Mr. K.
Oh, sure. I met you outside of the old Yankee Stadium when it was more personal. In my opinion, it's too corporate now, and it takes away from the fan experience. That day, I got an autograph from you, Doc Gooden, Joe Torre, and John Sterling. It was like one of the coolest moments of my life.
Wow, so I'm number four on that list for sure, but I'm glad I gave it to you.
You described the interlocking NY when I was a little kid. That was also really cool, too. So it was like a great moment, me growing up.
Nice.
All right, guys, stay safe, and great job.
All right, take care.
That was it? He said that he wanted to say that Sam Darnold's not all that, and then he went through a laundry list of how wonderful we are.
No, it was like an episode of the Chris Farley Show.
You might
remember that. Remember that time when you called the Yankees Blue Jays playoff game? That was awesome.
Yeah, the Paul McCartney one was tremendous.
Remember when you were in the Beatles?
That was that. You just nailed it. Yeah, that was that.
It was very sweet. I love the Chris Farley Show. It was hilarious, but, you know.
Let's go to Barbara out in Florida. Hello,
Barbara.
Michael, Don, and Peter, good afternoon, guys. Awesome show as always, but that last segment, I could not stop laughing. I'm sorry. I got tears in my eyes.
Okay.
Michael, I have to ask you a question. When you were first talking about the season starting and calling and looking at a monitor and whatever, people could never really picture what this was going to really be all about. Mm-hmm. And last night, fortunately, because I can watch on MLB, and I can listen to Michael Kay call the shows, they actually showed you in the booth, David in the booth, and Paul out in Ohio. And let me tell you, that really gave a true picture. And if nobody knew that that's how you were calling the games, you would never know, because you call the games the same way whether you're in the stadium or you're not.
Well, thank you. And I will humbly say that I'm very proud of the job that Yes has done putting these games on. I think that it has brought people some happiness, and we've tried to make it as normal as possible. And Paul has been great in the basement. And
he's all three of you.
David is such a star. I mean, the stuff that he
His Milano cookies last night.
Oh, everything. I mean, everybody is up for some fun. It's a little bit different. And,
right.
Barbara, we are
right.
Proud of
I have so, one other so question.
Okay.
Have you guys at all heard from Morris?
No. And it's concerning.
You know, I have been thinking about him, and of course, I'm from Long Island, and, you know, he would call in all the time, and it's been a really, really long time, and I just wish he would call in and just let everybody know he's okay.
I would agree. And
we've talked about that a few times now.
The problem is, Barbara, is that, and it's really not a problem, we should be pleased about it. The lines are jammed all the time. Maybe it's hard for him to get through, but we would love to hear from him. And I don't think we have a number for him. If we do, Andrew should call him.
I don't think we do.
That's not good.
No.
Let's go to Ryan in Connecticut. Ryan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Ryan?
I'm good. First off, just want to say I love the show. Been a long-time listener. And I finally got through, and I just want to talk about the Jets. You know, you guys made a great point earlier this week, and you seem like, you know, you hear from Ira, like, guys, people are disappointed, the fans are disappointed in what the team's doing. We all knew when Adam Gase was rumored to be, you know, the next coach in line for this team, we were all not happy with it. We were all, you know, upset with this guy from Miami who had a horrible track record down there. Like, he made the playoffs once, you know. Then you find out Peyton Manning is the one that's calling the shots here. He's the one that calls Christopher Johnson and says, yeah, this guy, you know, he's a great quarterback whisperer. He's going to help Sam Darnold. He's going to groom him. He's going to be the next great coach for you guys. Christopher Johnson says, you know what, Peyton, you're right. I'm going to hire Adam Gase. But then you even go back before that mistake when Woody Johnson was in control. He hired Charlie Cassidy and Ron Wolf as a hiring committee and came up with the idea of hiring Mike Maccagnan and Todd Bowles. And you've seen the track history of how bad that move was. It's just my personal opinion. This has been a, all adding up to what's going on right now. And I feel like if we can get past Adam Gase this year and just let the guy you gave an 8-year contract to, and Joe Douglas, give him the chance to hire the coach that he wants and stop letting outside voices who don't run this organization chances to make those decisions, maybe you'd be in a better chance right now at actually putting a team together.
But that's not the way they operate, right, guys? I mean, I believe that the general manager should hire his head coach, but the way that their structure is, it comes from the owner.
It did seem fishy to me, though, Don, the Casserly and Wolf thing. I mean, these guys have no skin in the game, so if you make bad hires, what does it matter to them? They move on.
They... what that told me when it happened is they don't have anybody within the organization that they trust to make football moves other than the people that are actually in charge at that particular moment. So, like, there's nobody to tell him who to hire. He's got to go hire somebody to tell him. And you're right, they have absolutely no skin in the game whatsoever. Uh-oh, we have an appearance.
An appearance?
Who's that? Here we go.
Somebody got loose.
Oh, Jay Lynn.
Jay,
just doesn't matter.
That's my favorite. That's Jalen. That drop?
That was Marco.
Oh, that's Marco.
Say hello, Jalen.
Hi.
Oh.
Wow. Hi, Jalen.
Cute.
Say hi, Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Jalen.
How about Peter?
Hi, baby.
Hi. Hi, Jalen.
Where's mommy?
See, that's Don being passive-aggressive. He's actually saying to Jalen, you're not supposed to be here. Your mom dropped the ball.
You see, that's me. She sees herself on TV.
Oh, you see yourself on TV.
That's how Peter acts when he sees himself.
Ask Don, does she know her brother's name?
Where's Marco?
Well, he gave it away.
Mom.
Would she mind?
Now here's the worrisome part, Don. Here's the worrisome part.
What's that?
Is someone unaware that she's lost?
No, mommy's down here now, just waiting for us to go to commercial so she can grab him.
Oh, we're so long from a commercial, we have no clock integrity. Let's go to the 98.7 T-Mobile listener line, where sports fans get the spotlight. We'll go to Tommy in Flushing. Tom, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you guys doing?
Good. You?
Doing all right.
Good.
Basically, I'm just trying to explain to you my perspective as a Jets fan. Been a Jets fan my whole life. You know, passed on from my parents, which I'm really...
You must
I'm
be
not
so
really
grateful.
Thankful about it, but...
No, you shouldn't be.
No, but it's better than being a Redskins fan. But,
Washington football team.
Oh, sorry.
Washington football team.
Sorry, right. Washington football team.
And also, but, no, it's not. I've lived through three Super Bowls. It's not even close
to
this.
There you go.
That's true. I mean, what the one was in the 60s, I wasn't even thought of yet. But
exactly.
It's just like, all right, like looking from the start of this season, I knew we were going to be bad because you had, like, all right, they were talking about, oh, we could maybe look at Javadian Clowney or, you know, we have a possibility to get Yannick Ngakoue and we have this and that going for us. But our signings were Breshad Perriman, Chris Hogan. You know, Jamison Crowder is the third best wide receiver on anyone's team. I know other callers have said the same thing. But at the same time, it's just like, it's really the same old Jets. Like, everybody hates the coach, but the owner is blindly all in for Adam Gase. I really was upset when Mike McCarthy, a guy with a Super Bowl win on his resume, doesn't even really get, you know, that job opportunity. It goes to a guy that got run out of Miami who went from a good team to a bad team. Like, they were in the playoffs, they were actually doing well, and then they just regressed so much. And that's exactly what happened with the Jets. I've seen Sam Darnold regress. Like, all right, his first pass was a return for a touchdown. But there were games last season where I was like, okay, you know, that this looks pretty good. He has an ability to move the pocket. You know, he has that tangible that says he can make all the throws, you know, an NFL quarterback can make. But now I have a coach that's, you know, cutting his legs out from under him, saying, I don't trust him in that audible situation. And now you have no wide receivers to really think of. Like, all right, you're right. Someone, I forget who said, Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones weren't enough weapons for Aaron Rodgers. We have nothing. Like, it is literally that
so
bad.
Let me ask you this, though, Tommy. How do you stay in it as a fan? Because they had an ultra-low rating. Did you even watch them last week?
I actually work the game. I work in TV, and I had to work. So I had to.
But, now, if you didn't, God, would you? I mean, are you at the point where you just can't take it anymore?
It's hard, man. Like, as a Knicks fan and as a Jets fan, it's like you look for hope in some possibility, you know? But, like, with this team right now, I know it's just going to turn and crash and burn in flames. Like, I had some good years with, you know, Chad Pennington, Vinny Testaverde, even the Sanchez before the butt fumble. You know, he took us to two AFC championship games. Nothing to hang your hat on, but I still at least had some fun. watching.
Tommy, as bad as it's been,
now
to be
this
a Jet
is not
fan.
Fun.
Right. I'd have to double check and look. I don't think there's ever been a time where they've gone 11 years without a playoff appearance. And that's what we're looking at because they're not making the playoffs this year. I mean, 11 years. That's a long, over a decade?
It's stunning. It's stunning. It's not even, you can't say it's a lot. It's stunning. Everybody makes the playoffs at some point in a couple of years in the National Football. It's just stunning.
I'd have to look. Maybe in the 70s. I know they went to the playoffs the year after the Super Bowl, so the 69 season. And they may have gone the whole 70s maybe without an appearance. You know, but that's 50 years ago. You know, it's just amazing. This is really bad for the Jets. I mean, this is a long stretch. That championship game was 2010. And that was what? How many coaches ago?
I mean, the thing, just the basic structure of how they do things, it's wrong. You let the GM hire his coach. There shouldn't be a linear management style where the coach can go right to the owner and the GM goes to the owner. The coach should go to the GM. The GM should go to the owner. The owner shouldn't listen to a newspaper columnist who doesn't even have a pass to go to their games anymore
right.
and completely take the knees out from a really solid candidate who, although he's run into some tough times in Jacksonville, also had that team playing very well before Tom Coughlin had the bottom drop out. And he hasn't playing well now. I mean, and Doug Marone probably wouldn't still even be the coach. I don't know. But I'm just saying the way they make their decisions, it's kind of bass-ackwards. It just doesn't work.
Well, somebody told me a while ago the reason they have that structure is because Parcells kind of scared them off. Like, they didn't want to get that guy that was going to
be God forbid they'd have a Parcells type
in charge. Well, but they got that anyway. Like, right, so you didn't hire Mike McCarthy because he'd be too much of an alpha male because he won his Super Bowl. He'd want to do everything. Well, don't you have that now in Gase, except he doesn't have the resume that McCarthy had? Now, they'll tell you he doesn't have that power, but we know better when the president was let go and the general manager was let go. So they're going to tell you that he's just the coach and Douglas is the general manager, but we know better when the general manager that was hired was basically his buddy. In Chicago? So they're so afraid to have that, like, Parcells one man running the show. But they have that now, except he doesn't have the resume that Parcells or Holmgren or somebody like that has, or McCarthy.
Bad. Bad. I feel for Jet fans. You know, I was in the car listening to the phone calls with Dan and Greg. I mean, it hurts you. It hurts your heart that a fan base has to go through this.
But
I mean, it's like Met fans complain about, you know, their lot in life, and the Jet fans go, hold my beer. I mean, the Mets won the World Series in 2015. Hold my beer.
It's
the
so
Knicks
true.
Complain. Hold my beer.
I agree. It's
there not is not cool. another fan base. Like I said, it, as bad as the Knicks have been, they went to the second round in 2013, won 54 games. I mean, they won a playoff series.
Brutal. Just brutal.
I'm going to disagree here. The Knicks and Jets are right in the same convo.
No, for overall, but I'm just saying in the last decade, the Knicks have accomplished more than the Jets have.
Oh, okay, just going back, but literally just before that time.
No, if we were going to sit here and like what franchise is worse, I mean, it would be a conversation, I think, between the Knicks and the Jets.
Because the two championship games was something that the Knicks haven't sniffed in a minute.
Oh, well,
okay, right?
But the Knicks were in the championship. What was it, in 2000?
2000.
Okay.
Well, 99 in the final, conference final in 2000.
Right. And then the bottom fell out when Jeff Van Gundy walked out. But, you know, they had that great season with Mike Woodson. What have the Jets given us? At least the Giants gave us that one playoff season with McAdon. At least they gave us that.
And at least from the Giants' standpoint, Michael, it's been bad. They haven't won a playoff series, a playoff game in a decade either. But the last time they won a playoff game was a Super Bowl.
Right.
So I guess, you know, that had to pacify you for a decade. I think a lot of Giant fans, if somebody whispered in their ear, listen, Bradshaw's going to score the touchdown. You're going to hold on to the lead. You're not going to get another sniff of this for at least 10 years. I think they'd all sign up for it.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.